Apparently, the state will not be represented here today. If you want to make argument, you may. Okay.
But do you want her to call the case?
Yes, please. Would you call the case?
The court will now call Juwan McMahon versus the state of Texas. May it please the court, is Kevin Lytle, the argument for the appellant.
You may proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court. I don't know that I've ever scared away opposing counsel before, so this will be a first for me. I am honored today to speak to you on behalf of Juwan McMahon, and I appreciate the court giving me your time and attention to this case. I think this case pretty much boils down to two kind of big picture issues. One, which I don't believe has been adequately, if at all, addressed in Texas jurisprudence, is does due process apply to a defendant when he is rejecting a plea offer? And if so, to what extent? Normally, when these kinds of cases, these complaints are made, the complaint is dismissed pretty summarily by courts. Excuse me. and isn't heard or considered for the due process implications. And I'm asking the court to do that today, and so I appreciate this opportunity to discuss that with you. The second main issue is when does a record on direct appeal demonstrate ineffective assistance of counsel? I will readily admit that that's not often. Usually, the record is not fully developed on direct appeal in order to demonstrate with sufficient evidence that ineffective assistance of counsel has occurred. In this case, however, on these facts, on this record, I believe that this court can reasonably conclude that Mr. McMahon's counsel, that he committed errors and omissions that fell below the objective standard of reasonableness, and that Mr. McMahon was harmed as a result. So first, I'd like to talk about Mr. McMahon's rejection of a three-year plea deal. He was indicted for the second-degree felony of assault against a family member by impeding the normal breathing or circulation by constricting the throat with a prior conviction. So that's a second-degree felony with a range of punishment of 2 to 20 years in TDC. He was also in the indictment included an enhancement paragraph of a prior felony conviction, which enhanced his punishment range to a first-degree felony punishment range of 5 to 99. However, the state made him an offer, which was, for a criminal lawyer, a pretty good one, to dismiss the vehicle charge and to let him plead guilty to a lesser included charge of just the unenhanced felony assault for 3 years in TDC. Mr. McMahon rejected that offer, and Judge Beach in District Court Number 1 gave him some admonishments on the record when he decided to reject an offer, which is pretty standard practice to make sure that defendants know exactly what they're doing when they're making their choice. But in those admonishments, Judge Beach gave him mistaken information or false information, admonished him that the range of punishment he would be facing in rejecting that offer if he were to go to trial on the indicted charge was 2 to 20 years. But on the indicted charge, the range of punishment was 5 to 99.
She didn't actually say on the indicted charge. She just said, what would you get from the jury?
That's correct, Justice Gabriel.
I mean, wasn't he notified in a plea acknowledgement form that the range of punishment was 5 to 99 years?
He was, and in after the fact.
Well, wasn't he acknowledged in a plea acknowledgement form when he was offered originally? Isn't there a plea form in the record that he signed way before any of this?
The state pointed that out in its brief. I actually didn't see that in the record, and if so, that's my mistake. And I'm assuming that the state's telling the truth about that. And so if he did acknowledge that the full range was 5 to 99 prior to this, I don't even recall from the record if that was immediate. Usually, having practiced in Judge Beach's court, usually there will be kind of some papers that you sign when you reject an offer, and then she puts it on the record to make sure that everything is clear. I don't know if that was signed at that same instance or if that was at a previous, like a previous setting that acknowledges certain, what offers are and what the full range of punishment is. So I'd be happy to address that in the record. If it was that very same day that he signed that, then that probably has bearing. Well, it definitely has bearing on our conversation. If it was at a previous setting, then I don't think that it does. Because I think that when you're telling a defendant, you know, do you understand what the offer is? And he says, yes, I understand that the offer is 3 years. And do you understand what you'll get from a jury if you turn down this offer? So on these facts, what he'll get from a jury, the minimum is 5. Because the indicted, if they're proceeding to a jury on the indictment, then the minimum is 5. Unless the state is saying, no, we're willing to proceed to trial on a lesser, we're going to waive enhancements at trial, but that wasn't stated either. And no one, not his attorney and neither, and the state didn't correct that that assumption either. Everyone just kind of let Mr. McMahon believe that a jury, if he went to trial before a jury, he would get 2 to 20 years.
Well, of course, he'd already rejected the offer before she ever said that.
I don't believe that that's necessarily the case. I understand that he said the offer is 3 and I reject it. But I don't, Judge Beach did not accept his rejection at that time. She said, my question is, do you understand, Mr. McMahon, what the range of punishment is? And she went through her admonishments, as is her regular practice, to make sure that he understood, and then ask him, now, having understood all of that, do you reject it or accept it? And at that point, he rejected it. That's how I would read the record. I understand that he blurted out on his own, the offer is 3, and I'm not taking it, or I reject that. I think, though, what this record shows, ultimately, he did plead guilty, you know. So I think that is evidence of his intention not to go to trial. This kind of looks like somebody who wanted, he didn't want to take an offer that was what he believed to be above the minimum, you know, a plea offer. In truth, he was turning down an offer that was below the minimum that a jury would have given him. So,
and what do you say about the state's argument that the trial court was not empowered to give him 3 years? Because it is below the minimum.
I think that's just kind of an incredulous argument, to be honest. Obviously, the state, in making that offer in the first place, the state was making an offer on the lesser included charge, which is the abandonment of the enhancement. That's what the offer was on. And that happens regularly in a regular course of criminal defense practice. That's what some of the negotiations are about. You know, as a defense attorney, we'll say, he's willing to plead guilty, will you drop the enhancement? Or if he pleads guilty, can we work something out?
Does the record support that theory? Is there anything in the record that supports your theory that that's what was going on?
I just, that's regular practice. And so I think that if we're looking at having defined, you know, reasonable assumptions for things that aren't in the record, that's reasonable, that's regular practice, that would happen. Because obviously he was indicted on the enhanced charge. So the judge is obviously free to accept any plea agreement to a lesser charge, just as she's free to accept the state's dismissal of a charge as part of a plea agreement. Because clearly, I mean, the state said at that moment, during that particular rejection of the plea colloquy, the state said, I'm dismissing the vehicle charge. But, I mean, she didn't dismiss it ultimately. That was just part of the plea negotiation that he was rejecting. That's not something that stuck through, because when they went to trial, a punishment trial, he pled guilty to the vehicle charge later. So it was just, everyone was just kind of understood, these are the terms of this plea agreement. But if he rejects this plea agreement, he's looking at 5 to 99 on the felony charge and 2 to 10 on the vehicle charge.
There's also nothing in the record that he would have accepted the plea without the, he would not have accepted the plea without the bad advice, is there?
I believe that it's a fair assumption given that he did plead guilty. He pled guilty to...
There's case law that says we're not supposed to make those kind of assumptive leaps that you're directing us towards, isn't there?
Well, I think the fact that he did plead guilty is evidence of an intent not to plead not guilty to a jury. You know, there's nothing that would indicate...
But it has to be because he got bad advice. Where's that?
I'll agree with you that that's not in the record. I will agree with that, definitely, that his reasoning... I would just argue that the record itself supports an intent to plead guilty. Because just looking at it...
But an intent at the time of trial or an intent at mm-hmm. the time he rejected the plea bargain offer? I mean, his attitude could have changed over time.
Sure. That's the weakness in my argument, and I think intellectually, honestly, I have to admit that. I still think, however, it's worth this court's time to address how due process is involved. Is due process implicated or violated if a judge gives false or bad or misleading information, even if she's not required to give those admonishments in the first place? Even if the defendant is rejecting a plea offer and exercising a constitutional right to trial at that time. Because I think the state's argument, kind of relying on some previous case law, would lead us to some pretty absurd results in the end. If we were to say, no, judges are pretty free to say whatever they want to say, they can lie, they can do whatever, and judges don't, you know, but to say that due process doesn't require, at a minimum, that when a judge speaks to a defendant, when she voluntarily admonishes him to make sure that he understands what's going on, that her voluntarily doing so, even if statute or the Constitution doesn't require it, when she does give information, due process requires that it's correct. I believe that that's a holding worth making, or at least that's an area of law worth explaining and expanding further from this court to give some direction to us below when we're dealing with these situations. Because it's, you know, without that, it's just, you know, it feels like we're not very moored during that kind of plea negotiation time. I would like to talk about the ineffective assistance of counsel. Excuse me. I think that the case law is much more clear about an attorney's duty to his client during the plea negotiations. Even if due process or Article 2613 doesn't hold Judge Beach accountable for false information, I believe that the Sixth Amendment and the Supreme Court holdings in Loeffler versus Cooper and Strickland v. Washington do hold his lawyer accountable. His lawyer absolutely had a duty to make sure he understood the difference between rejecting a 3-year plea offer for a lesser included charge, the difference between that and going to trial on the full indicted charge. This record would demonstrate that was not made clear to him. He was asked, did you have a chance to discuss this offer with your attorney? Did you have a chance to discuss the full range of punishment with your attorney? He said, yes. What is your understanding? 2 to 20 years. That's just not correct. That's not correct as far as what he would be.
Well, it is for what he was pleading to.
It is for what he was pleading to.
That's the only way he could get 3.
Yes. But if he faced a jury on the chart, regular practice in these courts are if you're rejecting this offer right here to this lesser included charge, what's going to happen, Mr. McMahon? What's going to happen to you if you reject this? Well, you're going to go to trial on the indicted charge. There's no requirement for the state to drop the enhancement once if you reject this offer. That has to be made clear to him. And the language that I may be just reading and adding my personal experience into the record, but regular practice, this is the language. You know, what do you understand what you'd be getting from a jury? So that means not a jury on this, on a hypothetical abandoned charge. What would you get from a jury on what you're actually indicted for? So, yes, it was a correct answer for what he would get from a jury if the state abandoned the enhancement. That's a correct answer. But that's not the case here. The state didn't abandon the enhancement when he rejected that and didn't intend to. I would like, my time is running short, so I want to just briefly touch on some of the other examples of ineffective assistance of counsel. I believe when you read the record as a whole, my time is up, so if you guys have any questions about the other examples of ineffective assistance, I'd be happy to answer them.
No, thank you.
Okay.
We appreciate your argument today. Your case has been submitted, and you are free to go.
Thank you, Justice Sutter.
We're going to take a brief recess until our 10:30 argument.